Welcome to Medically Speaking, Auburn's own medical radio show with host Dr. Mark Vaughn of the Auburn Medical Group and Larry Finney. Here we are again, Medically Speaking Radio with Dr. Mark Vaughn.
And I'm Larry Finney, and I'm not the doctor.
Yeah, we heard that in the promo this week.
Yeah, everybody keeps referring to us plurally. And I don't want to say everybody. I mean the playmakers.
I didn't know you were going to say their names, but yeah.
Well, I want to disabuse them of the idea that I am myself a doctor. I am not a doctor, but I talk to one on the radio.
So do you think they're going to hear this?
Oh, no doubt. They listen to us all the time.
If they're listening to us in their cars as they're leaving.
As we listen to them.
That's true, as we're coming. Okay, well, we need to get started with today's show. Today, we are going to be speaking about fibromyalgia with Dr. Elaine Lambert from Stanford University. And we're excited about that. We're going to be calling her after the first commercial break. Before that, we're going to go over a little bit of news, particularly one update that we need to do on a subject that Larry had talked about. And then we need to get to the disclaimer, too. Why don't we get the disclaimer out of the way? Want me to read it this week?
I think here's what we're going to do. This is a much anticipated portion of our program, the medical disclaimer, the legal disclaimer. And what I think we'll do is have Dr. Vaughn read it, and I will translate for our listeners in Forest Hill.
The content of this website and the Medically Speaking radio show are meant for entertainment and for general information purposes. No doctor-patient relationship is attempted or implied through the show or the website.
In other words, we will not be sending you a bill because you're listening. Okay, go ahead.
Well, that's a good way to put it.
Yeah.
Any medical advice, home remedies, and all other medical information on this website or radio show should not be treated as a substitute for the medical advice of your own doctor.
Never do your own surgeries.
Do not attempt any treatment mentioned on the website or the show without consulting your doctor.
Same thing.
Always consult your own doctor if you are in any way concerned about your health. If you need a doctor and live near Placer County, call Jen at 530-886-8630. If you have a medical emergency, call 911.
That's 911.
Thanks. Medically Speaking Radio, Dr. Mark Vaughn, Auburn Medical Group, K-High Radio, and or our sponsors are not responsible for any diagnosis or treatment made by anyone based on any of the content of this website or the Medically Speaking radio show.
If you do something stupid, that's on you.
In addition, the views and opinions expressed on the show or on linked websites are not necessarily those of Dr. Mark Vaughn, K-High Radio, the Auburn Medical Group, or any of the show sponsors.
And that goes for all of our sponsors and everybody, and the playmakers, too.
Why are we taking the playmakers? I want to go over that part again. In addition, let me modify it a little bit. The views and opinions of Larry expressed on the show are not necessarily those of Dr. Mark Vaughn. I just wanted to make that clear.
Fair enough. They're my opinions, and I'm sticking to them.
Okay. Now, we also want to let people know that they can be fans on our Facebook fan site. We're excited about that. We're up to 81 this week, and we can actually have some dialogue on that if people want to ask even medical questions that other people can also benefit from hearing the answers or reading the answers. Go ahead and put them there. We'll go ahead and talk about stuff. We'll discuss things.
We'll read your questions on the air. We'll even give you credit, but we won't name your name.
We'll even unless you ask us to.
Yeah, okay.
But we'll try to keep it as anonymous. Well, it's not real anonymous because anybody on Facebook is going to be able to see what they're writing. But that's fine. You know, if it's something... doesn't have to be anonymous.
Or you can send it directly to mark@medicallyspeakingradio.com.
Yeah, but I may just completely ignore it if they're... Well...
Well, then send it to larry@medicallyspeakingradio.com, and I'll answer your doggone question.
Okay. Well, you can get me to answer it. I know that. But yeah, if they want to maintain anonymity, and they write it to me and say, I'd like this question answered on the Facebook website or on the show, that's fine. I can
guarantee you they'll like my answer better.
We also, this week we don't have the live video feed, and we're not going to next week either because we're going on a remote location. But we do have that live broadcast from the studio on the weeks that we are having people who aren't camera shy as guests and that we are not on a remote location. So to do some news recap, it was 2-3 weeks ago.
Something like that.
That we, Larry had his little segment called
A Cussing and Drinking Are Good for You, Possibly.
I believe that's what you called it, yes. Can I have the disclaimer again?
The disclaimer.
In addition, the views and opinions expressed by Larry on the show are not necessarily those of Dr. Mark Vaughn. Okay, go ahead.
Well, there's some science behind this, though, Doc. There is.
We've been over this.
Okay. A few weeks ago, we talked about this whole idea that there was, a study was done, I think it was Wake Forest University, where they had the groups put their hands in buckets of ice water, and one group used a neutral word, and the others were allowed to use any form of horrific Anglo-Saxonism they wanted. And those who cussed were able to keep their hands in the painful, icy water for significantly longer than the other group.
Okay. And so someone's interpreting this as cussing makes you able to endure pain or not feel pain.
Yeah. But here are some words to live by. There was a Dr. Steven Pinker, a Harvard psychologist.
Before you say these words, do I need to have my finger on the button?
No, I'm not going to actually use the words, okay? This isn't George Carlin. I'm not channeling George Carlin. This is this. If you casually swear a lot in your daily life, you may be blunting cuss words as a prescription for pain. Speculating on why foul-mouthed women on average did better in suppressing pain during Stephen's experiment, Dr. Steven Pinker, a Harvard shrink, said he suspects that swearing retains more of an emotional punch because it has not been overused. That's one reason I think people should not overuse profanity in their speech and writing, because it blunts their power when you need them. In other words,
amen.
You can, well, and you can build up a cussing callus, I guess. Those who just toss them around indiscriminately. Yeah.
Okay, now who are we talking about? Those people that every other word, yeah.
Yeah.
We all know the person.
Yeah,
we all have them in our lives.
Yeah. Goodfellas, you know. Those kind of guys.
I wasn't going to call them good, but.
Well, I was referring to the movie.
Oh, yeah. Well, actually, I would say, if I was talking about a movie, I would go with the one with Kevin Spacey and Kaiser Sosa. Usual Suspects.
Hey, there you go.
Yeah, that would be my example.
Well, anyway, the point is, if you're cussing all the time, sticking your hand in the bucket of ice water and cussing about that isn't going to help you. You don't need the ice water.
Yeah, right? I'm still confused as this. Yeah. Ice water. Hand in the ice water. That's,
well, I mean, they, I suppose they could have attached electrodes to their body
there,
parts.
Now you're talking. But, you know, that'll get some words out of
people. That'll get you to talk. Waterboard them. It's amazing how many people speak English when you waterboard them.
Okay. There was also something else on that. Did you see the other part about they have this term, they put it in quotes, a tendency to, quote, pain catastrophize also tended to reduce the analgesic effect of obscene words. Now, what did you read about the pain catastrophize, what that means? It's the people that make everything out to be so horrible.
Yeah. You,
very dramatic. Yeah, everything
you stub
is
your toe and you might as well have decapitated yourself.
Yeah. They can cuss and it doesn't matter because they're already making a big deal out of it. Which goes back to what I said when we originally talked about this. What's going on here is not language centers in the brain. It is another part of the brain that has to do with emotion. And that's why we're getting the people saying the words in the first place separate from language. It's an emotional expression. And then the other part of it is the people who pain catastrophize, that's doing the same thing as letting out these obscene words. But they do it all the time. Everything's a big tragedy. And so it just doesn't matter when it really is a tragedy. They don't get any relief from the obscenity use.
They enjoy the pain.
I don't know. Maybe they enjoy the attention of it.
Yeah, okay.
Okay. Now, you have a little familiarity with Department of Consumer Affairs for the state of California.
Yeah, a few moons ago I used to work with them.
Okay. They have different divisions. One of them is over the Board of Nursing. Another one is the Board of Medicine. We had an article this past couple weeks about the Board of Nursing tripling its force to enforce their diversion program in nurses. Apparently, there were nurses using drugs that were doing this for months or even years, and the board not getting around to doing anything about it.
Yeah, and they've nurses having access to some pretty interesting pharmaceuticals.
Absolutely. Same thing is true for the medical board and for the physicians, but specifically this was the nursing board. Now, on the medical board side, we had some news from them lately, too.
Yeah, they brought back their program, Operation Safe Medicine. In fact, it came back just last month, and mostly in Southern California, but it's all over the place, all over the state. And what is Operation Safe Medicine? It's to go after unlicensed practice.
Yeah, they want medicine to be safe. They want it to be medicine that's regulated and licensed. So they're going after people who aren't licensed. Apparently, in the immigrant population in Southern California, there are lots of these practitioners that'll be in the back of a business that's established for something else. But you walk through the business, go to the back, and there's this guy with a room. And he's back there practicing some kind of medicine on you. And they have some examples of some of the more egregious violations that they gave us.
Yes, they refer to them as the more egregious. I like that word, egregious. Well, here's one. An unlicensed female operating a booth at an indoor swap meet. Now, right away, I'm saying there's a disaster for recipe.
Doctor, I have a rash here at the swap meet.
Here, I'm at a swap meet. Ooh, where's the nearest doctor? Oh, here's someone operating a booth. Was dispensing and administering various prescription drugs, non-prescriptions, and herbal remedies from another country.
Did some of them have my aunt's name on the prescription bottle?
Now, here's the worst. She injected a female with a substance labeled as eucalyptus oil in the bathroom of the swap meet. No, that's not funny because the victim died the following day.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, that's not funny. Here's another. Insert your own joke here. An unlicensed male was performing breast augmentation surgery on females, and I would hope so. I mean, if you're going to perform that surgery.
I hope it's not on me.
I don't care. I like mine the way they are. Anyway.
Get a man's ear.
Anyway, he's doing these breast augmentation surgeries in an unlicensed facility. The victim suffered severe infections and disfigurement. What else we got? An unlicensed individual was using unapproved Botox, you know, as opposed to the approved Botox.
Well, I'm not sure what they mean there, if it was actually truly Botox from wrong sources or if it's something else. We do know that there was a doctor in Auburn who was using something that was not approved for the same purpose.
Yeah, these horror stories go, here's one. An unlicensed individual permanently branded a victim using the wrong device instead of removing a tattoo. So, this is a double whammy. Not only did you not get my tattoo off, but you've given me some other mark.
Oh, man.
And this one, I think I know who this is. No, really. An unlicensed individual permanently depigmented the skin of a victim who was treated with an incorrect device. That explains Michael Jackson.
Oh.
That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, okay. All right, yeah. That would depigment, yeah.
He's... Remember back in the days when he used to be black?
Yeah. We could talk about the Michael Jackson case, but it's so overdone.
It's going to be around with us. You know, Michael Jackson is going
to
be.
It's not like they have to listen to Medically Speaking to get information.
No. But it's the phenomenon of there's certain people who will not go away. Those of you who remember Liberace, he didn't go away for a long time. You watch the tabloids. That gives you a clue as to how long a person's going to last, even after death. Elvis was forever in the tabloids. Liberace for a while. Who else was there? They kept trotting these people out. You know, there's Elvis sightings at the laundromat or whatever. There are going to be Michael Jackson sightings, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Well, there already have been.
Janet. They call him Janet now. Yeah.
No, there's this picture on the internet of some really interesting looking clouds over Manhattan, and people reported they saw the face of Michael Jackson look down on them. This happened like the week after.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
You see that?
Deified him?
I don't know.
This is sick.
He was smiling on Manhattan.
See, now we've done what we didn't want to do. We talked about the guy.
Okay, we got to go. We'll be back with Dr. Lambert.
Few things in life are harder than thinking about serious illness or the death of someone you love. Research confirms that Americans want the basic services that hospice provides. Care at home or in a home-like setting. Treatment that preserves a sense of dignity and respect. Emotional and spiritual support for patients and for their families, and effective pain management. Hospice helps patients and their families deal with end-of-life challenges in a life-affirming, compassionate way that brings dignity, hope, and love to every day of life. This message of love and caring is the focus of hospice care. This message is brought to you by Sutter Auburn Faith Hospice. We can be reached at 886-6650 or click on the link for Sutter Auburn Faith Hospice on the Medically Speaking Radio website.
Larry, have you ever been to Auburn Drug Company?
Yeah, that's the one with the marble soda fountain at 815 Lincoln Way.
Yeah, right there in front they have the marble fountain, and in back is an independently owned pharmacy right here in Auburn.
And that thing has been around for a long time.
Since the 1800s. They are so great because they actually fill your prescriptions when you ask them to, unlike the chain drug stores that make you wait.
You know, and waiting there wouldn't be a big crime because, heck, you could always go to the soda fountain. That's Auburn Drug Company at 815 Lincoln Way in downtown Auburn. Give them a call at 885-6524.
Now, back to Medically Speaking with Dr. Mark Vaughn and Larry Finney.
Welcome back from the break. We are here on Medically Speaking Radio with Dr. Mark Vaughn of the Auburn Medical Group and Larry Finney. And we have our guest, as promised. We have Dr. Elaine Lambert from Stanford University. And before we get started, I'd like to give a little bit of background information on her.
Yeah, Dr. Lambert received her medical degree from the University of Texas Southwestern Medical School in Dallas. She completed her internship in residency in internal medicine and a fellowship in rheumatology at Santa Clara Valley Medical Center in San Jose, and a fellowship in clinical research at Stanford. Currently, she's in private practice and provides musculoskeletal medical care. She serves as the team physician for the Stanford women's basketball and volleyball teams.
Welcome to the show, Dr. Lambert.
Well, it's a great pleasure to be here.
Now, we have billed this as being a show about fibromyalgia, and I'd like to know what your background is specifically that qualifies you to speak on that subject.
Well, I'm a rheumatologist, and in general, fibromyalgia patients often are sent to rheumatologists. I also have lectured on the subject for probably 20 years, and it's an area that I have many, many patients who have this condition, and I feel very comfortable in discussing it.
About how many patients do you have with that have this condition?
That's a little hard to say. Certainly hundreds, because fibromyalgia fits into patients who have only fibromyalgia, and then many of them also have other conditions that I see frequently, like rheumatoid arthritis or lupus. And then fibromyalgia occurs as a secondary phenomenon. After they've developed their other condition, they get fibromyalgia as a generalized pain disorder. So many of my patients have both, and sometimes they develop the fibromyalgia many years after they have their primary arthritis condition.
I guess a good place to start is what is fibromyalgia and who gets it?
Oh, I agree with you. It's a good place to start. Fibromyalgia is a common, chronic, widespread pain condition. And what we mean by that is patients who have fibromyalgia have a very heightened sensitivity to pain. They tend to hurt when they shouldn't hurt. For instance, exercising causes them to have more pain in their muscles. The pain is primarily muscular, but a lot of people also feel it in their joints. And then they can have many other problems that go along with the muscle pain. And the hallmarks are fatigue, problems sleeping, and problems with stiffness, as well as the generalized muscle pain. And then the people who get fibromyalgia tend to be women. It's about nine times more common for women to get fibromyalgia than men. It can happen in all ages, but the most common onset is in the 20s and 30s.
Now, when you say it's a common condition, about what percentage of the general population would you say is affected?
There's certainly different estimates, anywhere from maybe 2 to 5% of the population in the United States. And so that would give you as many as 10 million people.
Is there any kind of estimate as far as how many of these people know that they have it compared to how many actually have it and don't know?
Well, I think that's a very important point, because there certainly are many people who have this kind of pain disorder that is probably not aware of it, or have been told, you know, there's nothing wrong with you, because this is often hard to diagnose because of the lack of objective tests. You can't go get a blood test to have fibromyalgia diagnosed. It takes a clinical diagnosis, a practitioner seeing the person, getting their history, doing examination, and then often eliminating other possible causes before you can say, indeed, the person has fibromyalgia.
So there's potentially a lot of people out there that are experiencing symptoms, never had really a name put to it, just know that they're kind of miserable. And we have hope for them, because there is actually treatment.
Absolutely. I think that would be the most important take-home message from our talk today about fibromyalgia, is that there is a lot of hope, and there's actually a lot of options for benefit, and many of those actually rely are within the person themselves, finding the right things for them to do and getting direction. People can help themselves, and then there are fortunately other treatments such as medications that could also be helpful.
So what are these things they can do themselves without even having to go see a doctor that will help them?
Well, there was a nice study that showed just knowing that you have fibromyalgia, getting the diagnosis makes a real difference in people's perception of their health and well-being. I think that's because once you understand this is a condition that isn't going to cause you to die earlier, it's not degenerative in the sense that it's going to cause permanent damage. So just understanding what the condition is really provides people with a lot of relief, because they have all kinds of things that they think, what could this be? Because I feel so terrible. I must have something, you know, awful that's going to cause me to die earlier, or, you know, end up in bed or something in that manner. So just understanding it is important. So I would say number one really is education. But beyond that, the next most important step is getting back to conditioning exercise, because it is painful to do activities like simple exercise. People stop. They think, oh, gee, something's wrong. I hurt when I go exercise. And what they then need help is how to get through that painful area of exercise to a point where they're actually feeling better, and learning how to do that in the right way, and then maybe with some other adjunctive treatments.
Dr. Lambert, this is Larry Finney. I'm thinking that as a layperson, this is one of those good news, bad news. I've been told that I have fibromyalgia, and the good news is, no, it's not degenerative, it's not going to kill you, but the bad news is, it never goes away, and I'm going to hurt all the time, and I'm going to be in this fog or funk for an indeterminate period of time. Have I mischaracterized it, or is that pretty much the way it is?
Well, no, I think that that's correct, that fibromyalgia is considered a chronic condition. We don't have a cure, but I would say we certainly have many means of helping with treatment such that you could control it. I don't think you can cure it, but you can control it. And I wouldn't say that you would have to then just be miserable and live with it. I really do think that the interventions we have available now and the understanding we have, even though that's certainly improved greatly in the last few years, we expect we're going to have more breakthroughs with treatment. But I think that the way I want people to understand about their fibromyalgia is that they can be empowered with information and treatment options that can help them really live a full life, and they don't have to be miserable. I think that's really the message.
In my understanding, there's very few objective diagnostic tests. So how would one diagnose this and distinguish the patient from an actual fibromyalgia patient, sufferer, from someone who's merely a malingerer?
Well, I think that there are some objective tests in the fact that we look for specific areas of the body that are tender. But even in these tender points that are used, clearly someone could just say, well, those do hurt. But the pain in fibromyalgia is quite symmetric. It tends to occur above and below the waist. And people do have often very typical problems. They do have problems with their memory that can be related to the fatigue. They feel very stiff when they get up in the morning. Cold makes their symptoms worse. As I said before, exercise makes it worse. So I suppose someone could, you know, feign all of these symptoms, but most of the time, I think an experienced practitioner can help to distinguish between someone who is truly suffering and someone who is, really faking it.
Okay, so listeners who might be thinking in terms of an easy worker's comp claim or, some time off work.
Disability.
Yeah, yeah, disability, Social Security disability or whatever the case might be, it's not that easy.
I would agree. It's actually very difficult to use fibromyalgia as a primary disability for most insurances and certainly for state disability. So typically, we would need to have another diagnosis that would be causing the disability. But, it depends on the circumstance and the individual. But I would say I don't really run across people who this is a big problem, the malingering. Most people, want to get better. They just need some tools and how to do that. And I think that really the message is there are things we can do. And though you very appropriately said, this is a diagnosis that you can't do a blood test, can't do an x-ray to diagnose. It's a clinical features and signs and symptoms that you put together. There are more objective measurements, but they're all on a research level. You can do a functional MRI of the brain and see different parts of the brain light up versus, say, someone who has chronic low back pain. It looks very different, differently in those patients. And also things like removing fluid, spinal fluid, and seeing very high levels of some neurotransmitters like substance P. They're like three times higher than someone with some other chronic pain condition like low back pain. So there are differences, and these are being understood better, but those are all things you would just do in a research situation, not something you would do in a regular diagnosis.
So we're not doing that clinically at all at this point. That's for people doing research on it for now.
Absolutely.
Okay. We're at a place now where we'd like to take a break, but when we get back, what I'd like to talk about are some conditions that mimic or can be easily confused with the fibromyalgia, such as the chronic fatigue syndrome. But right now, what we want to do is take a break. We'll be back shortly after the break with our special guest, Dr. Elaine Lambert from Stanford University and SOAR in Redwood City. You're listening to Medically Speaking Radio on KHI AM 950, the voice of the foothills. Since 1966, Sutter Auburn Faith Hospital has been providing award-winning care to members of the community, to people just like you. The tradition of excellence continues today with our comprehensive family birth center, cancer services, 24-hour emergency care, and a whole range of outpatient services with convenient hours and locations to serve you.
In addition, we've been recognized for excellence in managing heart attacks, heart failure, pneumonia, and surgical care. We are one of a select few hospitals in the state to earn recognition from VHA's West Coast region for sustained outstanding clinical performance.
To learn more about Sutter Auburn Faith Hospital, visit us on the web at sutterauburnfaith.org/medicallyspeakingradio. That's sutterauburnfaith.org/medicallyspeakingradio.
Sutter Health, with you for life.
This is Dr. Mark Vaughn. I want to tell you about my dentist, Rodney Kihara. His office is located right in town at High Street and Auburn Folsom Road. His staff is pleasant. They smile when you walk in, and you know who they are because they're there every time. We're talking about Flo, Cheryl, and Judy. Their pleasant faces welcome you into the office and let you know that you're in the right spot, a comfortable place to go to the dentist. Call Dr. Kihara's office at 888-1966. That's 888-1966.
The doctor would say, don't stick anything in your ear. Unless, of course, it's medically speaking. On K-High, the voice of the foothills. Now, back to Medically Speaking with Dr. Mark Vaughn and Larry Finney.
And we're back from the break. Again, we are speaking with Dr. Elaine Lambert. We're speaking on the subject of fibromyalgia. And when we left off, we were talking about the conditions that can mimic fibromyalgia or be very similar. Specifically, chronic fatigue syndrome was one we wanted to differentiate from it. What are some of the differences you see between those two conditions?
Well, truthfully, there's much overlap between them because you see fatigue as a hallmark symptom in both. But for most of us, we think of chronic fatigue syndrome as being a reactivation of viral illnesses. Now, there's several different types that can fit in this. The classic one is Epstein-Barr viral disease, like common mononucleosis, is caused by. In those patients with chronic fatigue syndrome, their illness was started by this viral illness, and then they get a reactivation of symptoms that are typical of the flu. They can have a sore throat. They can have lymph nodes that are swollen, even low-grade fatigue. Low-grade fever, along with this very pervasive fatigue problem. People with chronic fatigue syndrome often also have fibromyalgia. So that makes it this overlapping symptoms sometimes very difficult to sort out. But in someone with pure fibromyalgia, you wouldn't see those flu-like symptoms as well.
What are some of the other conditions that typically a patient will end up having that comes in saying, I have fibromyalgia, and you evaluate them and you find out, no, it's such and such diagnosis? What would those other diagnoses be?
Well, one of the more common is hypothyroidism, so having low thyroid levels, and it can cause many similar symptoms to fibromyalgia, and that's an important one to always rule out in someone. You can do that by a simple blood test. In someone over the age of 50, there's a condition that's inflammatory called polymyalgia rheumatica, where you also get painful muscles and fatigue, but in that condition, there's an abnormality in the blood of an elevation of a sedimentation rate or C-reactive protein indicating inflammation, and that condition is treated appropriately with low doses of prednisone or cortisone. So I'd say those are two of the more common diagnoses that we might see, but I would also say there's another problem that happens fairly frequently is a consequence of taking drugs to lower your cholesterol. Drugs in the category of statins can cause a lot of pain in the muscles.
The statins that people might recognize in case they're taking them for the cholesterol would be things like lovastatin, Mevacor, Lipitor, Zocor. What are some of the other popular ones that are out there now? Crestor.
Yes, I would agree. All of that category of drugs can cause problems with muscles, muscle aching, sometimes cramping in the muscles, and if it was very pervasive, could be mistaken for fibromyalgia. So that would be some of the common things that can mimic fibromyalgia.
Which would actually be a great thing to happen because you just take the drug away and you cure it without having the continuing pain of fibromyalgia.
But definitely, that would be a much easier way to treat the condition of chronic pain and fatigue just by removing the offending drug.
My understanding, Dr. Lambert, is that there are triggers that these patients have that, you know, they have their good days, their bad days, and there are certain external conditions like bright lights or loud noises and movements, whatever, that can trigger fibromyalgia, their pain. Is this my understanding correct?
Absolutely. In fact, we think that the initial onset of fibromyalgia is probably triggered by a number of factors in most people who get it. Sometimes it's an injury, very commonly a whiplash injury or neck injury. Other times it can be a viral illness like we were talking about with chronic fatigue syndrome might be the beginning, but then they don't get recurrent viral problems. They just develop fibromyalgia from that type of illness, but it could be even just a very severe emotional stress or situation that's very stressful to people. And those are many of the same things that will then cause a flare of fibromyalgia. And other things would be cold exposure, any type of illness, even good stress like getting married, something that changes a lot about, say, maybe your sleep and what you're doing during the day. If you change your exercise patterns, many of those things can cause a flare of fibromyalgia.
You're talking about both flares and actually starting the illness. Now, my understanding is that there's not a lot firm about where the illness comes from, but there's some theories regarding improper transmission of pain signals and pain pathways.
That's very true. The thinking currently is that this is a problem with the nervous system becoming too sensitized to pain, and that the nerves are putting out a flood of extra neurotransmitters. They're kind of hyperstimulated, and that's why things like pushing on one's muscles that shouldn't be tender or exercise that shouldn't hurt cause this pain at a level that is much greater than it would be in someone who has a normally functioning nervous system.
To the point that actually there may be a biochemical change in their nervous system, so it's been altered permanently for their life?
No, that's very true, that there is something that can be measured that's different in their nervous system. We don't know if it's always permanent, but certainly in people with active symptoms, you can see those kinds of differences.
So it's a case of a little bit of pain causing pain to be worse or being sensitized to pain rather than getting used to it, which oftentimes people have this misconception that you can somehow get immune to pain or get used to it. But in these people, it's actually worse the next time around. The same amount of pain will be perceived as a greater pain.
That's exactly correct. They think of the pain threshold as shifting to where things that shouldn't cause pain do, and you have a lot more pain for a painful stimulus. And that actually is something that's tested in laboratories and shown to be different in a person that's considered normal and someone who has fibromyalgia.
And I've actually worked with some practitioners who are of the opinion that every person suffering from fibromyalgia has specifically had a trauma in the past, like sexual abuse, say as a child, and try to get them all into counseling. Is that something that you see in your practice is very prevalent in this population of patients?
It's certainly been described that often people with fibromyalgia have something in their past that was problematic from the standpoint of abuse, but I would say it's not such a high incidence that that's really something that you would rule in or out fibromyalgia from that basis. But a lot of people do equate depression and fibromyalgia. But interestingly, the studies have shown that if you take a population of rheumatoid arthritis patients who have a lot of chronic pain and fibromyalgia patients who have chronic pain and look at the amount of depression, it's about the same. So that there's a misconception that all patients with fibromyalgia have depression, and that's just not true.
But yet antidepressants will work for pain, not only in fibromyalgia, but for almost any type of pain, lessening the amount of pain, or at least lessening the use of other pain-relieving drugs.
That's correct. And specific antidepressants that have a dual action against both serotonin and norepinephrine. So here in the United States, the ones we have that do that are Effexor, Cymbalta, and a brand new drug called Savella. And those three drugs really do a good job in treating pain as well as depression.
And since I'm a big proponent of generic drugs, I would have to point out that Effexor is now available as venlafaxine generic twice daily dosing, without having to pay all the money for a name brand drug.
Absolutely. And then we also use very low doses of drugs that used to be used primarily for depression that can be quite helpful in fibromyalgia. and they're in the category of what are called tricyclic antidepressants. The hallmark drug is amitriptyline or Elavil, and we use low doses of that category of drug to help with sleep and pain, and those are quite inexpensive. I would also throw in cyclobenzaprine or Flexeril, a muscle relaxant that's similar to the tricyclics, and that can be very helpful in fibromyalgia.
Dr. Elaine Lambert, other than pharmaceuticals, see, for some of our listeners who are not pill takers, and I'm one of them, are there other treatments such as, say, exercise, massage, acupuncture? Does any of that stuff work, or does fibromyalgia react primarily to chemical intervention?
No, I think that truthfully the most important aspect of treatment has to do with getting in a conditioning exercise program. And you also often need to start quite gradually to allow for the fact that you're going to have some increased pain as you're trying to exercise. So that's really the most important emphasis is, you know, start low, go slow, get the exercise. Water exercise is especially beneficial if you can get in a warm pool. It will allow you to do a lot more with your muscles. But we think about many of those things you just listed, the complementary therapies, as being a kind of a means to that end of getting to the exercise. So if you go get acupuncture or myofascial release or chiropractic care or massage, and that then allows you to do more exercise, that's, you know, wonderful, and that might be adjunctive for you.
So our high school coaches who believe that there's nothing that a few more laps won't cure, we're pretty much on the right track.
Though you might end up throwing a person with fibromyalgia in bed for a week if you did that, saying, oh, just go run more laps. You really have to go slowly and listen to your body and make adjustments. And that's where I think as health practitioners, we really need to be good coaches to help our patients understand these are reasonable goals and how to help them meet those goals.
Now, you're talking about drug therapy. You didn't say anything about the SSRIs, the Prozac class of antidepressants, not as effective as the SNRIs, which you did mention by name. But do the SSRIs, if a patient's already on their Cymbalta, or their citalopram or their fluoxetine, is that also somewhat helpful?
You're talking about drugs like Prozac or Zoloft or Paxil. They don't have really a significant benefit for pain. They're going to help the depression and sometimes fatigue, because those often go together. But they really don't have the same benefit for pain that the dual action drugs do.
Okay. And what about dopamine antagonists? Do they play a role?
No, they don't seem to have much of a role either. We do see, though, the category of drugs of anticonvulsants can be quite helpful, and particularly Neurontin or gabapentin and Lyrica or pregabalin. Lyrica has actually been approved for fibromyalgia's use, as has been Cymbalta and Savella, the two SNRIs that are the recent drugs. But this category of anticonvulsants have, in a different mechanism, also been helpful in treating the nerve-generated pain. We call it neurogenic pain that we see in fibromyalgia.
Okay. We're going to take another break now. When we come back, we'll be talking a little bit about where patients can go to get some help for this. Again, this is Medically Speaking with Dr. Mark Vaughn and Larry Finney with our guest, Dr. Elaine Lambert. We'll be right back. This is Dr. Mark Vaughn. I wanted to let you know a little bit about our practice at the Auburn Medical Group. The physician, nurses, and front desk personnel all approach the patient, asking themselves the question, how would I want to be treated if I was in the patient's shoes? Listen to what one of our patients has to say about her experience at the Auburn Medical Group.
My name is Susie Brown. I just want to sincerely thank that group of people for being there for me in some emergency situations. They are very efficient. Their staff, including their receptionist, even when you call her, she's got sympathy and compassion for you. And when you're ill, that's what you need. The nurse staff is wonderful, and Dr. Vaughn listens to everything you say, and they just get on things. They do not let anything lag.
If you need a doctor, call us at 886-8630 or look at our website at auburnmedicalgroup.com.
Do you find yourself overspending, overeating, or in unhealthy relationships? Is your anger out of control, or do you struggle with drugs and alcohol? Are you tired of just trying harder to deal with your struggles? If you answered yes to any of these questions, there's help available. Celebrate Recovery is an international ministry that meets locally at Parkside Church, 3885 Richardson Drive, Auburn. Meetings are held every Friday night from 6 to 9:15 p.m. All areas of recovery are welcome. Celebrate Recovery is a Christ-centered, 12-step recovery program that offers real and lasting change. Contact Sheila Dobbin at 823-9911. That's 823-9911. For a listing of Celebrate Recovery locations, go to celebraterecovery.com. We invite you to join us at Parkside as we celebrate recovery.
Now, back to Medically Speaking with Dr. Mark Vaughn and Larry Finney.
We're speaking with Dr. Elaine Lambert. She is speaking on the subject of fibromyalgia here with Larry Finney and Mark Vaughn on Medically Speaking Radio. Dr. Lambert, we were talking about therapy, and we're going to want to get into telling the patients where they can go to get help if they think they have this or want to have it treated more adequately. But I also want to touch on, in addition to the drug therapy, we had talked about sources of great stress that may have triggered it. Is there a role for counseling, going to either counselor or psychiatrist in helping to decrease the pain from fibromyalgia?
Most definitely. You really would like to have a multidisciplinary approach and get the help of physical therapists or trainers, psychologists, people who do cognitive behavioral treatment. All of those areas would be very helpful, and certainly anyone who has mood problems related to their fibromyalgia would be benefited by getting the a psychologist involved, particularly one who has expertise in pain. And I did also want to emphasize, because we were talking about some medications, that traditional pain medications, for instance, Vicodin, have been shown in studies to not be helpful significantly in fibromyalgia. So we really try to dissuade people from using those types of pain medicines because they get a false sense of improvement and they really don't help the disease long term. There is a weak pain medicine called a weak narcotic called Tramadol or Ultram that has shown benefit. And if someone does need something to treat pain to allow them to get to their exercise, that would be a better recommendation than typical narcotics.
And you call Tramadol a narcotic or weak narcotic. It has action on the opiate receptor for pain relief, but not the receptor for euphoria. So it's like taking a morphine derivative as far as the pain relief without all the high that comes along with it.
Well, that's correct. And Tramadol also has a action with the serotonin and norepinephrine reuptake inhibition like the antidepressants. So it's got a nice dual action and a very safe drug.
Okay. So where would we send these people to get care? Do they need to go to a specialist like you, like a rheumatologist, or is there somewhere else that would be more appropriate?
Well, I think they should definitely start with their primary care physician. And if the person that's seen them can't give them enough help or do not feel like they have the expertise, then certainly they would help facilitate a referral. There's people who have interest in fibromyalgia in many areas other than rheumatology. There are certainly people who specialize in pain medicine. A lot of times physiatrists or physical medicine or rehabilitation doctors have an interest, some neurologists. So there's in different areas, different people, but you can go onto also websites to get some information, and you might be able to find a practitioner listed at some of these websites. And I understand that we'll make those available on your webpage so that your listeners can go there and look these up.
Yes, we're going to have them at medicallyspeakingradio.com. And on our notes page, we have the websites that that you have mentioned. They're already up there for our listeners to find.
Yeah, but for those not necessarily internet savvy or sitting around their radio with their notepads ready, for those of you scoring at home, as we say in the baseball world, what might be one or two of the better websites to go to?
I would say the National Fibromyalgia Association has a website called fibrohope.org, so fibrohope.org. And then the Arthritis Foundation website has a lot of good information, including local support groups, exercise classes in both water and land. They have some very good materials. You can get some for free, some that you can purchase. And their website is arthritis.org.
That was Fibrohope, fibrohope.org, and arthritis. Was that an org?
Or a yes, yes, arthritis.org.
Arthritis.org, yeah.
In addition to the general stuff about fibromyalgia, are there some particularly notable cases that you recall from treatment in your office that would be interesting for us to hear about?
Well, one comes to mind is a young woman who was a competitive swimmer, and then she had an injury that left her unable to swim. She gained a lot of weight. She became unable to exercise and got generalized pain, came to see me, diagnosed the fibromyalgia. And she was very motivated because of being an athlete to get back to swimming. And she's, with the help of some medication, her regular exercise program, counseling, she's been able to not only get back to swimming, but actually return to coaching. And so I would say she's a good example of someone who can overcome much of the symptoms of fibromyalgia, not to say she doesn't still struggle with it and have, you know, symptoms that are still there, but she's done a very good job in improving things with all of the different components of treatment.
And that's with all that physical activity. Now, someone who's a success story like that, if they were to fall into a period of time where they get out of the shape, out of their fitness routine, is it starting all over again to get back into that place where it doesn't hurt to exercise?
I don't think that it takes as long to get back. Certainly, you know, flares of fibromyalgia might really be significant and limiting for someone, but I think it helps because they have the knowledge that they can get better, and then that makes it, in a lot of ways, easier to get back to the place where they are improved.
Okay. We thank you for joining us for our talk on fibromyalgia on Medically Speaking Radio. Dr. Elaine Lambert, it's been a pleasure to have you on the show with us.
I enjoyed it very much. Thank you.
And with your field of expertise, there are so many other things that we could talk about in the future. Do you think we might be able to do that again?
I would love to.
Okay. And we weren't able to take listener calls this time, but that is something we'd like to be able to incorporate more in future interviews. Larry, anything in follow-up or in conclusion?
No, it's been real. I'm just glad okay. I don't have fibromyalgia.
Yeah, yeah. Be thankful for that. We're going to be back next week again at our, next week we're going to be on at a different time. We are moving to 10 o'clock in the morning starting on July 25th. So we're going to have to, August 25th. What?
15th, I believe. It's the 15th. Yeah.
You know, that's why I have you here. And it's August 15th.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we need to have
for
a calendar.
Orientation. It's the fibro fog.
Yeah, the dreaded fibro fog has overtaken Dr. Vaughn.
August 15th, we change our time to 10 o'clock in the morning, still on KHI AM 950, and you can still find us on the internet at khi.com streaming. And don't forget to fan us on Facebook and write any messages on the wall and any questions you want to address on the show, go ahead and put them there and participate in our discussions. And if you have pictures, go ahead and post those also. Until then, we'll see you. This is Dr. Mark Vaughn saying stay in good health.